the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. You can also get it on our website, illegalcurve.com, and on this tsn1290.ca website. Gentlemen, 20 years ago today, do you remember where you were?
I was at the game, Drew. Against Quebec, Stéphane Fissé.
That's right.
Come on.
20 years ago today, Timo Solani broke Mike Bossy's rookie goal-scoring record.
Isn't that unbelievable? It's 20 years.
Oh, God.
So much happens in 20 years. Jeff's friends come and go.
Thanks for that.
They may mostly go if they're friends with you.
Not with us, though. But I can't believe it's 20 years ago. Unbelievable. That has to be the best moment in sports history in Winnipeg.
Yeah, probably.
Better than the time Drew scored a goal in the Jewish Floor Hockey League.
Well, and the Avco Cups, I assume, were up there, too.
Yeah, the Avco Cups. But for our generation, probably. Yeah, I've got to give a hat tip to Kevin Gibson of TSN Research for that nugget of information.
Gibson's finest.
Were you at the game, Drew?
You know what? I was actually supposed to be at the game, and I got sick that day, and I had to give the tickets away.
You didn't go, and you were sick, and you didn't go?
I was ill.
What, did you have chicken pox?
I don't think I had. I don't know. No, I don't think I had.
I think
chicken
you had a box of chicken. Is actually what happened.
That's right. I ate a box of chicken and got sick as a result. Yeah, that's what happened.
Were you there, Izzy?
No. I remember watching it on TV. I was 10 at the time. I remember watching that game. It was incredible. Remember the sign, 52, 53, 50. Unbelievable.
There's nothing more fitting than, by the way, the fact that the Jets ended up losing that game.
Yeah, 7-5 or
7-4. Yeah, they ended up losing. That's the best part of the whole thing. That sums up the Jets, probably the old Jets.
Oh, yeah, I remember I was there with my dad, and they had the sign, 52, 53, 54, Bossy's record is no more.
They had the new Boss video back in the day when there was VHS.
That's right, VHS, and they're playing Quebec.
Yeah.
Anyways. And it was an afterthought in terms of the game. Like, nobody cared that they had lost.
Yeah.
It was just, and he threw that glove.
Still the best celebration in probably the history of hockey. I know the Tiger Williams is and Theo skating the length of the ice on his knees.
Who almost Team caught the glove?
Who almost caught the glove?
Dal Zekins.
That's right.
Yeah.
Drew, you know what's funny, though? Maybe not funny. I hate when people say it's funny and then it's not funny. But, you know, 20 years later, Timo Solani, last night, scoring for the Anaheim Ducks.
I know.
I was having this argument with a good friend of ours. I think he's the best European player of all time. I think it's Jager Solani. For me, I know Jari Kurri and throw in other guys in there. But I think their longevity, I mean, he's still doing it 20 years later. It's absolutely incredible. The guy is a surefire Hall of Famer and arguably the most popular athlete ever to play in Winnipeg. Even though he was only here for 2.5 years, look what happened last year when, you know, the fans were booing all the other players, chanting for Solani. What he did in 2.5 years, specifically that rookie year, I mean, it's never been matched before.
I hope he plays another year, then we'll be guaranteed to see him going forward, because it's the you know, based on the new alignment and the new schedule, there's a home and a home, home and away with every team, you know, every year.
Him playing another year, just based upon the fact that he's
still dominant, or still very good.
Still very good. And you watch him play, and, you know, it's not a guy who's hanging on for dear life here. This is a guy who's, people are keeping up with him, not the other way around.
He hasn't lost a step, Richie. He's still in good shape. If he tells Bob Murray he wants to play one more year, Bob Murray will say, okay, great, glad to have you back for one more year.
Well, because the truth is, losing him out of Anaheim, there'd be a hole in their lineup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not like, you're right, it's not like this is a fourth line guy who's playing at a replacement level. It can be easily replaced from a guy from the minors. You know, you lose him out of that lineup, you lose a guy on your power play, you lose a guy on your second line. You know, it's not easy to fill a top six role. You have to find a guy to fill a top six role in that case.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the Jets' week that's been so far before Joe Bettinati joins us in about 5 minutes' time.
Yep.
Joe. Oh. I said Joe. I don't think I said Joan. Joe Bettinati from Comcast Sportsnet in Washington.
You're no ordinary Joe, so.
The Washington Capitals play-by-play man. You know, it's this team is playing well. It's almost as simple as that. There's nothing really you can criticize. You can comment about how atrocious the power play's still been.
And it is atrocious,
but in spite of that, they're still doing what they need to do. They go anytime you can go into Madison Square Garden.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And at the end of a road trip, your fourth game in 6 nights, and you can come out with a victory. You get full marks. I mean, you just get full marks. You get full points on your report card.
You know, you don't. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We don't want to get too high and too low on the Jets because we're still only 20 games into the season, and there's a lot of hockey to play. We still have, you know, almost 2 months of hockey left here. But they've won 5 out of 6 games, and they're winning. Pardon me, the close games. Almost all of these games have been close. They're not, you know, blowing anybody out by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I think we'd all agree, you guys talked about us on the Illegal Curve podcast, the Devils outplayed the Jets for most of that game. And, you know, the Jets got timely goals. They got a goal early, and then they got the beautiful goal that was set up by Bufflin that Ladd scored. But they're winning the close games. Pavlik is playing his best hockey of the year right now, both on the road and at home. And things are going well. But, you know, another game against a team that's struggling in the Washington Capitals today. And then you're going out for, the road trip against the Florida teams. And then the Devils coming up. Mm-hmm. So there's no rest here. I mean, right now things look good. But, you know, let's keep it going here. And then we can start to talk about the Jets as a playoff team maybe a month from now. But right now, I mean, let's you know, Richie, call it for what it is. They're putting together a nice little streak here. And you know, they need to if they have any chance at making the playoffs. But let's not start ordering the rings, so to speak, right now.
They have an easy schedule, and I think that needs to be spoken about. They play in a weak division, mm-hmm. and they're playing some bad teams, and they're going to play, obviously, more of a division-heavy schedule. I think that they're positioned fairly well right now to succeed, and I don't know whether or not they will or not. But I think the key to their recent success, and there are many keys. You don't just point to one, but we're going to point to one that I think is overriding all the others. And I think that's the play of Andre Pavel. I think goaltending is where it begins and ends with really all teams. But especially the Jets this year. Pavlik, up to the point of the beginning of the streak, was poor. I think his save percentage was below 900. Levels that just are not sustainable for any form of success. And now
he's up over 900 as of this last game. 901 is the save percentage. But if you look at it in the vacuum, his save percentage in the last, you know, 5-6 games has probably been closer to 930, 940, I think.
Dennis was saying on the radio it was like 920-something and more along levels of, okay, you know, that's really good. And the Jets, and that's a big difference. That 20% is a huge difference. And he's making saves. You know, for example, the Devils game on Thursday, Kovalchuk comes in late in the game. Big stop. Yep. And the team gets confidence. You get confidence from a goaltender that's playing well. You feel like you can maybe take a chance. But also, I think the Jets, for the most part, and they still run around a lot in their own zone, have paid better attention to detail defensively lately. And I think that's collectively they have. That's defense and that's offense. I think the back-checking of their forwards has been as good as I've seen since they've returned.
Yep.
I think the whole unit, for the most part, the 12-man forward unit, is back-checking harder than ever, and I think that's very important because the NHL, as it's currently constructed and the way the game is played, it's a significant portion of the game is back pressure, it's called. And what back pressure is forwards back-checking really hard and allowing the defenseman to stand up the opposing forwards at the blue line. Because what happens then is, you know, the puck gets thrown in deep, and you can usually, if you can transition it quickly, which the Jets have some good defenders who can move the puck, you can get the puck on your stick and out into the neutral zone very quickly. And the Jets, you know, Kane and Wright and those, and there's so much, they're bigger guys, and they're making it hard for the other team to get through the neutral zone, and then they're getting the puck out quickly. And the Jets' back pressure hasn't been, to me, this good in a while. I think there's been a little bit of an issue in terms of the gaps that have been created in the seams, and they've improved that. Now, is it perfect? No. But there has been an improvement, and this team's to succeed needs to be better defensively, and the steps, to me, have been taken. And they're not foolproof by any means because they do have bad defensive breakdowns at times. I think some of their defensemen are at fault there.
Got to give our boy Charlie Huddy a little bit of credit for that as well, working with the defensemen.
But that's also Noel. I mean, people like to take away, from Noel, but it's a team buy-in to defense.
Yep.
Let's go to break. Joe Beninati. We're going to talk much more about the Jets for the rest of the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe Beninati from Comcast Sportsnet in Washington is going to join us momentarily. In the meantime, this segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty can be reached at 230-6129. One more time, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the voice of the Washington Capitals on Comcast Sportsnet in Washington, Joe Beninati. Joe, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Drew. My pleasure.
Joe, you know, you look at the Washington Capitals and, you know, it was sort of a similar story last year, a very slow start. They were able to, you know, sort of sneak into the playoffs there at the eighth seed, beat the Boston Bruins in the first round. So it covered some of the warts of last year. This year, though, 7-11-1 through the first 19 games, they're at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. You know, what has gone wrong with the Washington Capitals so far this season?
How much time do you have left in your show?
About 70 minutes, so go ahead. It's all yours.
I might take 68 of those. there's going to be a lot of excuses right off the top, and I would think, you know, they sound like excuses, but they're the truth. And first and foremost, it's the fact that they've cycled through three coaches in a year and a half. And in this case, Adam Oates is coming on to an organization as a new coach, and he has 6 days to put his plan into place. And it's a pretty exhaustive plan, fellas. It's incredibly detail-oriented down to the inch on the ice. And it was a lot for the guys to digest. And I think in the first two or three weeks, we could see the Capitals not reacting on the ice. They were thinking on the ice. Okay, I'm supposed to be here, which means slot A goes there, which means tab B goes here. And if you do that at this level, you're not going to be playing your best. And the Capitals did not and were not. I think in the last couple of weeks, they've been much improved. They've won five of their last eight. Everybody is bemoaning the performance in Philadelphia. And trust me, fellas, it was god-awful. But they had been picking up the pace and improving and playing better prior to that night in Philly. The thing that jumps out at you is they are not a very good road team. They have two road wins all season. Thankfully for them, they both come against division rivals. And I know they're hoping to continue that trend again today against Winnipeg.
Joe, what's the biggest difference between Adam Oates' system that he's been putting into place and Dale Hunter's of last year?
Between Adam and Dale, it's more aggressive, more up ice, more in your face. Dale Hunter's concept last year was, if it's a 50-50 puck or less than that, I want you to retreat. I want you to be in a defensive posture. Adam wants to be up ice, wants to be in your face, and he's basically, at the outset of the year, guys had shown more New Jersey Devils tape than anything to his team because they were trying to mimic. They're going to tinker with, they're going to tweak some of the system that Peter DeBoer and Adam Oates were putting together a season ago in Jersey. And it took the Devils some time to fully understand and accept and acclimate to it and eventually become a threat in the Eastern Conference, all the way so much so to being an Eastern Conference champ and a Stanley Cup contender. I'm not saying that's the case for Washington, although I do believe some of the pieces are in place for that, but this system is much more ambitious, much more aggressive than what Dale Hunter would have had the Caps doing. In the playoffs, I know they're going to, if they get there, they're going to remember those lessons that Dale taught them about sacrifice, about defensive zone play, about the willingness to block shots come playoff time. I'm sure they'll remember those lessons, but they'll be more aggressive this time around under Adam Oates.
Joe, the Capitals went out and they acquired Mike Ribeiro from the Dallas Stars, and he's leading the team in scoring, and you know he's doing pretty well. But the Capitals have had some secondary scoring issues this year. How much do you think is that? How much of that is attributable to Brooks Like being injured and not playing yet this year?
You know, you value something, you know how important a player is, and then you truly understand that when he's not there. You know, Brooks Like, if you look at that contract, most people will sit there and go, whoa, that's a lot of money for Brooks Like. And then you realize when he's not in the lineup for 20 or so games what he means. Not only is it Brooks's play and effort level on the ice, fellas, it's also how everything else gets slotted when he's available. You know, guys have been playing out of position, I think, this season in terms of where they are on their offensive line, if you will. Guys who are getting first-line minutes probably shouldn't be and wouldn't be if Brooks was in his normal position and at normal health. I just think he's had an impact in a variety of different ways. His absence has, at least. And if you look at the Capitals this season to date, they've been center and right-handed dominant. They're not getting any production from their left wingers. You know, Wojtek Volski, I believe, is going to scratch today. Jason Chimera had a career-best 20 goals last year, three of them against the Jets, hasn't scored yet this season. Now, they're not getting any productivity from that left side. Ribeiro's been dynamite. Mm-hmm. I had a scout tell me, you're going to love Ribeiro, and then there are going to be some days when you're going to want to throw stuff at him because he's high risk, high reward. I haven't seen very much of that. He's been very, very good, putting his best impression, I think giving everybody his best impression in this a contract year, you know, saying to everybody, hey, I'm worth it. Keep me around and pay me handsomely.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Joe Beninati. He's the voice of the Washington Capitals on Comcast Sportsnet in Washington. You're listening to TSN 1290. Joe, earlier in the show, we played the audio and talked about Mike Milbury's comments on Alex Ovechkin from Wednesday night. How would you grade Alex Ovechkin's play so far this season?
I'd give him a B. Not much more than a B. And, you know, Alex needs to be a plus for this team to go where it wants to go. It's just a fact of life. And I think the captain realizes that he knows that's his responsibility. It wears on him. Trust me, it does. And his performance as the team's was in Philadelphia was not very good. I mean, it was one of the weakest games we've seen Alex play in quite some time. He had been picking up the pace. He had been, I think, adjusting much better to life as a right winger, which is what the coaching staff wants for him this season. And I think it gives Adam Oates' goal is to give Alex Ovechkin the ability to be a threat in three attacking ways, left, right, and center, and to give defensemen another concept, another thought. A lot of people felt like Alex Ovechkin's become predictable in the last couple of years. Those first 5 years were super elite off the board. Mm-hmm. People have reacted. Defenses have changed. Now let's throw something else at them. It's quite an adjustment for Alex Ovechkin, who is just notoriously a left-wing threat. The first few games there, he looked completely out of place. The last week or so, I think he's been much, much better. He's creating more offensive chances from that right side. He still strays. He still wants to go to the left. But in the same way that Ilya Kovalchuk learned in New Jersey, and then Adam also told us that they in some way moved Martin Saint-Louis to the left side in Tampa when Adam was a coach there, they're going to get Alex to be a dominant player. They'd love for him to be a dominant player again down the right side.
Joe, I watch a lot of this team in terms of on the power play, and they have a pretty dynamic power play. And Ovechkin, you mentioned the right side. He does play the left side on the power play. What is the key to the Capitals' success with that five-man unit, generally being Ovechkin with Green or Carlson, Ribeiro, Brouwer, and then Backstrom?
When the Caps aren't playing well, everybody puts the spotlight on Ovechkin, and I understand that. Nicklas Backstrom hasn't been himself this season, not to the degree that we know Nicklas Backstrom should be in a normal season around a 100-point performer. Nicklas just hasn't been that this season. But when the Caps' power play works well, Backstrom and Ribeiro are wonderful together, and they create so much of a distraction. They create, or they deserve so much attention from defenders with the way they interchange and work with the puck on the offside. In that sense, their left-handed shots on the right-wing side, they flood that side, and Ovechkin sneaks on the back door very much like Stamkos does in Tampa. And if that's not there, then Ribeiro and Backstrom are incredibly good at finding the soft spots at the center of a penalty-killing unit where someone like Troy Brouwer or Joel Ward will be, willing to muck it up, willing to take a pounding a little bit, but when they get that puck in that sweet spot, it's another goal. I really think the power play all revolves around Ribeiro and Backstrom, and especially Backstrom with his touch. Ribeiro's been the guy who's been making that primary assist, though, from where he's been. Those two have clicked really well together very quickly.
You know, Joe, we've been talking a lot about Mike Ribeiro. Has there been any talk amongst the Washington Capitals that they're going to try to sign him to an extension?
I can't tell you what George McPhee's been doing behind the scenes. I'm not aware of it. I'm sure that Ribeiro's play has definitely started at least discussions internally about creating some space for Mike in the future. I want to say it's a $5 million arrangement that he's on this year, and the last year of a $5 million deal.
Yep.
They bring him in from Dallas in exchange for Cody Eakin. It was going to be a, hey, let's wait and see what develops. Well, what's developed right now has been very good looking for Washington. So I'm sure there has to be some consideration being given and some talks internally. I have not been told that those where those talks are or how far they've progressed.
You're right, Joe. He's on the last year of a $5 million deal. Is there, you know, from the perspective of McPhee, Eakin's played really well in Dallas. Does that kind of up the ante for George to have to re-sign him? Otherwise, he's giving up a young asset for 1 year of Ribeiro?
I know where you're going there, and I understand it. I don't think that George is going to base his decision upon how Cody's performing. I think a general manager is just going to look forward in this instance and see how the player has meshed. Mike has come to town, was in town during the work stoppage, was part of the group that was working out, getting ready for the season to begin. And from what I can tell in traveling with the team on a day-to-day basis, I mean, he's become woven right into the fabric very quickly and seems to be extremely well-liked. And obviously the play on the ice has been very good, save for a couple of instances where he shot his mouth off and the officials have hit him with unsportsmanlike conducts and 10-minute misconducts. Other than that, Ribeiro's been on pretty good behavior.
You're listening to TSN 1290. We're joined by Joe Beninati. He's the voice of the Washington Capitals on Comcast Sportsnet in Washington. Joe, goaltending's obviously been an issue for the Caps so far this year. Both Braden Holtby and Michael Neuwirth are under a .900 save percentage. Sort of a two-part question. One, do we know who it's going to be today in net, or do we know who we suspect it's going to be today in net for the Caps? And then second of all, you know, is the future for the Caps goaltending still wrapped up in Holtby and Neuwirth?
Suspect that you'll see Holtby today.
Okay.
Braden and Michael Neuwirth, I think the organization has a great deal of faith in them, as well as the youngster that we got a brief glimpse of in Philadelphia the other day, Philip Grubauer, whom coaches tell me at a tender age of 21 is going to be a very, very sharp-looking netminder. And I think we saw a quick glimpse of that against the Flyers in relief of Braden Holtby. But back to Holtby, his play, when he's his own worst critic, guys. He's extremely harsh on himself. And I know when you look at the numbers, on the face value of just the numbers, you're going to sit there and go, well, that's not frontline NHL-caliber netminding. The coaches will sit there and break down every goal that they've surrendered this year, and double deflections and heavy screens and bad bounces. Again, it's going to sound like excuses, but it's been the truth. A lot of the coaching staff and the scouts will say that Braden is playing the position better and in a more sound way than he did when he was standing on his head in the playoffs against the Bruins and the Rangers. They like the way he's playing the position better so far in the first 20 games this season, in that he's more controlled, in that he's making those incredible saves that he made during the playoffs look rather easy this season. It's just a matter of getting consistency, and Braden will be the first one to tell you that he's been spotty at times, but in the last couple of weeks, as the Caps have picked up, you know, he's earned the trust of the coaches. They went with him eight straight times, including the Philadelphia start. Pulled him for Grubauer the other day with Michael Neuwirth ill. I fully suspect it'll be Holtby again today. And right now, as it stands, I think they believe Holtby gives them the best chance to win. They have a lot of faith in that young stable. They think Holtby, Neuwirth, and Grubauer can all be number ones.
Final question, Joe. The Capitals, obviously, you know, as we mentioned earlier in the interview, are last right now in the Eastern Conference. Do you see George McPhee waiting a little longer, or do you see him maybe trying to strike a deal sooner rather than later?
Well, I know they're focused and fixated on winning the division, and I know they're last in the conference, but they're not far off from the division
lead.
That's true.
Bless the Southeast.
It's just a fact of life in the Southeast. You know, I think the Capitals will sit there and say to you, if we can just hold our head above water against the Atlantic and the Northeast, and play extremely well against the division because of the crappy start they got off to. They won two games in their first 10. Because of that, we're going to have to be, Washington saying this, we're going to have to be really, really good against the division. If they're really good against the Southeast Division and win maybe 14 of those 18, they might just come away and win the division and be a three seed. So I'm not sure how you approach these personnel matters. I think the trade deadline is April 3. Mm-hmm. You know, George's pattern has always been to wait And I'm not sure that, you know, we haven't seen the Capitals in the basement of a division or a conference in recent years. But when they've been in a contending position, George has waited. We'll see how it turns out this time around.
Joe Beninati, the voice of the Washington Capitals on Comcast Sportsnet. Enjoy the game today, Joe. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, fellas. I had fun.
Take care, Joe. Thanks very much.
Well, Joe.
Go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Joe Beninati, the voice of the Washington Capitals. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and, of course, on tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always available to nurse you back to health. Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com.
Just so everyone knows, you don't have to be an elite athlete in order to go to Elite.
In fact,
I've gone there for, shout out to Elite a lot, I've gone there for my knee surgery needs and also my herniated disc.
Your knee surgery was a decade ago, and you've started to do rehab on it a week ago.
Well, it's funny. Richie knows this. I'm not an elite athlete, but the way I recovered from that knee surgery, that was elite.
Well, Lee had a lot to take care of you, but you were the guy who... Didn't you tear your ACL, come back too early, and then tear it again?
Yeah, it was torn a couple times.
That's why you had to go to physio, because he didn't listen to the doctors.
Yeah, you know, most people, okay, tear your ACL, you go do physio. As he waited about a decade in between that physio there. It was a real long surgery recovery time.
Worked out okay. I was back on the ice. Timmy saw me out there on the ice. I haven't lost a step. Still look good.
You lost three.
I can still dangle.
After tonight, you know, you look at the Jets. Let's look at the Jets' schedule from now until next Saturday when we're back on the air. They got tonight against Washington. You got Tuesday in Florida.
Yep.
You have Thursday in Tampa, and you have Friday back in Florida. So they got Florida, Tampa, Florida next week in addition to Washington today. You look at the schedule, and you look at where the Jets are in the standings, and you look at how all these teams have been playing, and you think the Jets should at least take 3 out of 4. You know, if they lose to Tampa, you're okay, I can understand you lose to Tampa. You know, I still think Tampa, their talent level is well, more than the Jets have.
It's also 3 out of 4 on the road, Drew.
Yeah, 3 out of 4 on the road. It's not easy. But, I mean, you have to think that the Jets want to at least get 6 out of their next 8 points, give or take.
They want to get 8. I think 4 is more reasonable. Half, you split the diff. You know, you get half on the road. You get 4 points in 8 games. I think you're happy. Anything above that, I think, is a little bit extra and a little bit of icing on the cake. That's my opinion. Because, you know, you're playing a back-to-back there, Drew. And realize it's not a lot of travel, but back-to-back on the road. And you're playing a Jersey team you've beat twice. So can you push your luck and beat them 3 times?
They're playing Jersey next Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, but so not before. Well, we're on Wednesday and we're on Saturday. But in those 3 games, Drew, yeah, you want to probably get, you know, I think it's half. You want to be able to get 3 points at least.
3 points out of the Florida road trip,
yes.
You're saying. And you have to take care of business tonight on home ice. You know, you were not the better team against New Jersey, I think, and yet they managed to pull it off, which I think is a sign of a team that's maybe becoming more mature.
I thought it was an even game for the most part. You know, it's a 3-1 game with an empty netter. So it's a 1-goal game, 2-1.
Yeah.
In terms of the Washington game today, Drew, you're exactly right. They don't have any... Right now, when you look at the Jets, they're playing a Washington team that has lacking secondary scoring, hasn't received the best goaltending thus far, is adjusting, as Joe just mentioned last segment, to a new system, haven't played well on the road, are sitting last in the Eastern Conference, obviously last in the division. Aside from their power play, don't really scare me too much. And you're at home, and you've won 5 of 6... Everything says you have to win the game.
Without one of their best defensemen in Mike Green, I mean, an awful defensively, but offensively he's very, very dynamic. So that's going to affect their you know, top three power play that they have in the league.
Yep.
You know, Mike Green, that's going to hurt that.
John Carlson, though, is almost just as good.
Right. I mean, John Carlson's very good. But, I mean, you are playing a team that is, you know, to some degree, I mean, they are wounded. You know, the Jets obviously have their health issues, but... You know, the Jets have sort of adapted to their health issues
I
with losing Toby Enstrom. They've been without him for so long. They know how to play without him. Whereas Mike Green, has been, he was just out of the lineup for this game. The first game he's missing.
Jets have had two significant injuries this year in Zach Bogosian and Tobias Enstrom. But we should mention, and obviously Redmond's an injury. He wasn't in the top six when he got injured. We should mention they've been actually very fortunate in terms of injuries to their forward group. None.
Right.
Yep.
None. I mean,
except Mittens, but yeah.
And you could argue Mittens is even going to draw in the lineup. There's not. I don't know if there's any team in the league that hasn't had any injuries to their forward group. So they've been fortunate in that respect. So I think injuries are a crutch if this team's leaning on. They're never going to be successful because there's been two injuries really all year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's leaning on that as a crutch. I'm saying they have to take advantage of a team. And we don't know. The Washington Capitals, I can't believe, are in a good place mentally in terms of preparing for a game. They're at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. They're wounded, and so you need to step on them early.
But it makes them desperate.
Right. There's that theory that, they're a cornered animal, so they might lash out at you. But, you do have to. If you don't give them a glimmer of hope and you don't give them a glimpse of confidence, you can prevent them from even thinking they should be in the game before it begins.
This is a very winnable game for the Jets. And the Jets, there's no Mike Green. Brooks Lake hasn't played at all. There's no Marcus Johansson. And the Capitals are having goaltending issues. Braden Holtby, we just had Joe Beninati on minutes ago, hasn't played very well. And, the way the Jets are playing, They're a better team as it stands. They're only a couple of points above the Capitals. But aside from Mike Ribeiro, who's really playing consistently for the Washington Capitals? Mm-hmm. I mean, a guy that I think has played really well most of the year is Troy Brouwer. But Ovechkin definitely, he's got 8 goals, but 3 of those came in one game. He's not the Alexander Ovechkin that we know and love. So, I mean, this is absolutely a winnable game for the Winnipeg Jets. And, You go out on the road for 4 games, and then March is coming up as a more favorable home schedule for the Jets. But again, like we talked about before Joe came on, this is just a small portion of the season completed. We're not even at the halfway point. You have to keep going, and you have to keep your eye on what the goal is. But take Mike Green out of the lineup. The Washington Capitals defense, as it's constructed, John Erskine was just extended for 2 years. Tom Pody, Roman Hamrlick. This isn't the Chicago Blackhawks here. They're a pretty slow moving group. And the Jets, the way they've been using their speed against certain teams, I think they can definitely take advantage of that and get some goals on the board.
The key to this game to me is simple. You have to not take many penalties.
Yep.
Because this team will kill you on the power play. And if you are on the power play, we spoke about it on Wednesday when we broke down the Capitals' power play. You have to take away, to me, be physical and take away Ribeiro on the half wall. And him or Backstrom, as Joe mentioned, as we mentioned on Wednesday, are a little bit interchangeable in terms of who's low and who's on the half boards. That's the key. You can beat this team in 5-on-5. That's if you take stupid penalties or penalties, period. You're going to have a hard time defending this power play. To me, if they can do that, if they can take less than 3 penalties, 3 or less, I think they're going
to
win this game.
And they've been doing a good job of that lately.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Jeremy Weiss from Weiss Tech Hockey is going to break down the Jets' power play with us. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter. Send us your Illegal Curve 50-50 draw predictions and your Illegal Curve game-winning goal predictions. You can do that via our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jeremy Weiss. Jeremy has spent some time in the past week or 2 weeks breaking down the Jets' power play, which can be described charitably as atrocious. So he has some insights into the Jets' power play. Jeremy, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. We sort of put you a little bit to work to try and break down what you've noticed on the Jets' power play and why it's been struggling so much. And, well, the first thing first is they simply haven't been getting very many power play opportunities.
Yeah, and you know what? I've watched most of their games the past 2 weeks, And last week was a lot worse than it was just this past week. So, you know, like against Boston, I think they only had two power plays. Against Buffalo, they only had one the entire game. This week, you know, against the Rangers and the Devils, they started using their speed more, which, you know, anytime you use speed, especially guys like Kane, you know, he uses his speed, and you either have to keep up with him or you have to drag him down somehow. And if you can't keep up with him, you know, that's where it forces penalties or draws penalties. And, you know, you noticed him doing that a couple times, driving the puck wide, and their defensemen are forced to haul him down.
Jeremy, I think you'd agree that, you know, the Jets' power play, the puck movement, you know, it's not that bad once they actually get set up. Can you talk about the puck movement on the power play and maybe how they're not translating that into good scoring chances?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things I notice is, like, when they finally get in the zone, they set up pretty well. There's good puck movement. They have, you know, they draw guys out and then move it properly. I liked what I saw as far as puck movement goes. They're using kind of a standard umbrella, as far as I could tell. But, you know, their puck move is pretty good. The main problem I'm seeing is actually getting it to that point where they can set up. And that's where, you know, as I was going through the film, that's what I kept seeing time and time again is just, you know, having a really hard time getting the actual setup.
Yeah, Jeremy, it's exactly right. And we're talking about that before coming on the air. You talked about the issues with the breakout and then getting the puck through the neutral zone. What has been maybe their biggest problem when they're trying to force it through the neutral zone?
Okay, so from a coaching perspective, everybody's going to have different opinions whenever you're talking about, you know, how a system should be run. My personal philosophy is, especially on the power play, you're going to walk the puck. So that usually a power play starts, the power play breakout starts from the other team dumping the puck
mm-hmm,
in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, generally speaking, your breakout's starting from behind your own net. What I usually like to see is the defenseman walk the puck until he draws a man in, and then using the pass to beat the man. So after you use the pass to beat the man, then now what have you got? You've got a 4-on-3. So you sequentially drop players in and then beat them with a pass until you've basically broken it down until it's a 2-on-1 or a 1-on-0. But, yeah, I mean, that's textbook, obviously. It doesn't always happen exactly textbook. But that's kind of the objective of what you're trying to do. What I see happening is, you know, and especially against those two games last week. Boston and Buffalo, is the defenseman walk out. There wouldn't be any immediate pressure on him. And so he would just be anxious to make that pass. So he'd pass up ice into coverage. And, you know, that's where Boston and Buffalo were eating them alive is because they would just – you know, they'd wait for that pass and then, you know, close in on that guy. So instead, you're using the pass to actually beat yourself instead of drawing a player in and, you know, and then making a pass to beat the, you know, to beat the forechecker. Now, I have no problem with the defenseman walking it coast to coast on a power play if there's nobody that comes and gets him. If nobody comes and gets him, then walk it. Walk it until somebody does come. It's a question of forcing the other team to make decisions. And if you pass too early or force a pass that's not there, you're making it so they don't have to make decisions. If they don't have to make decisions, they just hang back and wait for you to give it to them. And that's exactly what's happening.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jeremy Weiss. You can check out more of Jeremy's work at weisstechhockey.com. Has some great hockey videos on that website. We're breaking down the Jets' power play here on TSN 1290. Jeremy, you know, so we've already outlined that the Jets are having trouble sort of establishing themselves on the power play and getting set up in their umbrella system, as you mentioned. Then once they're able to do that, what you seem to be noticing is that they're taking shots and maybe giving up possession of the puck not at ideal times where players may not be in a good position in order to capitalize on any rebounds or any shots that miss the net as we've seen them do. It's sort of get into the zone, set up, take a rushed shot, and boom, already back out the other end, the defensive team clearing it away.
Yeah, and that happened a lot in the games last week. You know what? I kind of set up this general rule where if you don't have a 2-on-1 or better on the power play, you're better off to just drive deep, get the setup, and let your guys get in position. Because power play setups, it's a question of percentages. So you want to take the best shot possible that's going to give your guys the highest likelihood, you know, being able to jump on the rebound and maintain control. If you lose control of the puck on the power play, then boom, the other team ices it, you're down, you know, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you've just blown off 20 seconds off the clock because now you got to go all the way back, re-break it out, and go from there. So that was a couple of things. Like, I saw a couple, like a one-on-two, I believe, where I don't remember which player it was, but he drove in, cut to the middle, and shot between the two defensemen. And then sure enough, you know, the defenseman began to rebound because it went into the corner and, you know, dumped it right back down again. It happened a few times that way. So, you know, on the initial attack, I like that. You know, it's not a hard and fast rule, obviously, but the general rule, if you don't have a two-on-one or better, you're better off to drive D set up and wait for your guys to come get the set up with you. And then your shots are going to be calculated to give yourself the highest percentage chance of getting the rebound.
Jeremy, you mentioned that you've analyzed the Jets' power play on film, and you've noticed that they're forcing passes. You know, is it? I know you don't want to single out guys, but is it one particular player who's forcing passes? Is it a certain setup where they're forcing passes? And how and why is that such a big deal? And how is that contributing to their lack of success on the power play?
So it on the game film I watched, and it is one specific guy, but I can't remember which one it was. If I were like a commentator, I'd probably just know these guys offhand. But it was a defenseman. It was actually on the breakout. And there was one sequence in particular where he came out. There was nobody there. He forced a pass. It got intercepted, kind of chipped back onto his stick again. He kind of regrouped it, stepped out again up the middle. There was nobody on him, but then he forced the pass again. And same thing happened again. They dumped it back in. He went back in and got it, came out and tried it a third time. And it got intercepted again. So it's three passes in sequence on the same shift that, you know, he forced the pass, it wasn't there, and then it got dumped back in. Now, to the Jets' credit, you know, I don't know, maybe they watched the game film and saw the same thing that I did, but, you know, they really fixed it in this past week. Just, you know, against, I caught the Rangers and the Devils games, and, yeah, they really fixed it. I mean, you saw the defenseman walking it a couple times from end to end.
Yep.
Driving it deep in the corner and then getting the setup. And like I said, their strength is in their setup. And so if they're able to just drive down, focus on getting the setup instead of getting the initial shot, then, you know, things open up from there. Now, they still aren't converting, but, you know, the breakout and the setup and the puck movement was much, much better in this past week.
You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jeremy Weiss of Weiss Tech Hockey. We're breaking down the Jets' power play. You can read more of Jeremy's work at weisstechhockey.com.
Jeremy, you know, we talk about some of the issues. What would be some of your suggestions to solve the problems that the Jets have been facing on the power play?
So the way I'm looking at it is, you know, if they continue to make the improvements that they have been, as far as their breakout and gaining the setup in the zone. You know, their main problem now, I mean, their puck movement, like I said, is pretty good once they've got their power play set up. Their main thing is just figuring out how to finish, you know, how to bury the puck. There's a couple of small things that I see that maybe could be improved on. First and foremost is where their players, you know, in the standard umbrella, you've got, you know, your high guy in the middle, mm-hmm. and you've got two guys that are somewhat high, kind of at the tops of the circles. And then usually you have two guys near the net. Different teams stagger those guys differently, but what I'm seeing is, especially the main guy, he's right on top of the goalie, like right, his heels are on the edge of the crease most of the time. Now, there are different philosophies and different, you know, different approaches to screening a goalie. And I'm not even going to say one is better than the other, but they work differently in different scenarios. So if you're going to be right on top of the goalie, obviously that's it's a better screen. The goalie has a harder time seeing through you. And it's obnoxious for the goalie to have to deal with you there. So, you know, if that's what you're trying to accomplish, then that's great. But the risk you run is that the shot comes in, hits the goalie, and the rebound bounces past you,
right,
which is what's happening a lot with the Jets. If they don't end up fixing this today, then watch for it. Watch for it in the game. You know, the rebound oftentimes comes in, goalie makes a save, and the rebound bounces past the guy, so then he can't get to the rebound. What I would say is, you know, maybe try pulling that guy out 6 or 8 feet so that now he's further out from the goalie. Now you're gonna lose some stuff. You're not going to be as obnoxious in front of the net. The goalie is he'll be able to see the shot a little bit better. But what you gain is, if you think about the physics of the deflection, if you're right on top of the goalie and you tip the puck it doesn't have nearly as much space to change direction before it actually arrives on net as it does if you're 8 feet out in front. So position yourself in the exact same, you know, space, so you're still between the shot and the goalie, but just move yourself out from the front of the net about 8 feet, and you've got yourself, all of a sudden now you've got yourself a lot more space that the puck can change direction if you tip it. And on the flip side of the coin, if the rebound comes out, there's a higher likelihood that you'll be able to get your stick on it.
Jeremy Weiss from Weiss Tech Hockey. You can see more of his work at Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, techhockey.com. Jeremy, thanks as always for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some great insight.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Take care, Jeremy. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Appropriate music because we all shop at the thrift shop. Right?
Do you like Macklemore?
This is the only song I know.
It's a good song. It's big in the clubs.
It is. You're big in the clubs.
You're Reem listening to this in the clubs.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Jeremy Weiss from Weiss Tech Hockey for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview and the breakdown of the Jets power play, you can find it on iTunes as well as on tsn1290.ca and illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus, you know, on loan from Rick Ralph in the TSN 1290 roundtable, has joined us in studio.
I'm telling you right now, if Rick ever tries to offer Remus an offer sheet, we will match it. Any day of the week.
But does he have to go through waivers and then Hustler and Lawless can claim him?
Probably.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, probably. That would be, though, I guess, the rules of the CBA. Let's talk about some of our Winnipeg Jets. You know, sort of, you know, you look at this team and there's a lot of players that are playing very well, especially compared to last year. And we've got to start with Andrew Ladd. I mean, played well last year, don't get me wrong. But you know, what Andrew Ladd has done so far this year is just been actually remarkable. 20 games played, 20 goals. 20 points. 12 goals, 8 assists. I mean, he was the best player on the ice on Thursday night against New Jersey. And, you know, his goals are coming from the dirty areas, as the cliche goes. But, you know, you still have to score. So you don't lose any marks because they may not have any aesthetic value on the score sheet. Do you think that for the next, you know, 28 games this season, Andrew Ladd can continue up at this pace?
Well, it's difficult to say that he'll keep up this pace, but I think he'll definitely keep up the consistency. I mean, you know, Andrew Ladd has led this team from game one, and I wrote about this in our game day preview that our good friend Dave Manuk posted on illegalcurve.com. Andrew Ladd has scored points in 13 games out of 20 games. Sorry.
Well, it's like how many more?
Sorry, I'm getting distracted by Richie eating these cookies. Someone dropped off these photo cookies, and Richie's making a mess over here.
We're giving Ezzy a hard time. You mentioned Dave Manuk more than you mentioned yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm a selfless guy. What can I say? But, you know, Andrew Ladd has scored points in 13 out of 20 games, and I think that shows a lot. You know, he's getting points, and he has been getting points the whole year. And you mentioned the dirty areas, Drew. And, you know, Andrew Ladd is on the first line of the Jets. Most teams, he wouldn't be on the first line. He would admit that to you. He's more of a second, even a third line guy on a top team in the NHL.
Richie would agree.
Maybe not a third line, but he's a second liner. And
on a Stanley Cup winning team, is he a second line left winger or is he a third line left winger?
No, he's at least a second.
He's a second liner. The way he's popping the puck in the net now, he's a second liner.
Depends what you mean. He's a first liner the way he's popping the puck in the net right now. So,
well, if you keep popping those cookies into your mouth, Richie, you're going to be opening up a bakery pretty soon. So.
But you know what? The thing about Ladd, Drew, is can he score in one of every four shots? You know, moving forward, no. But he's playing really well right now, and what I like about his game is he's going to the net hard. You know, you saw last game on Thursday when he scored on Buffalo's play. He went to the net hard. That's why he scored. I mean, it was an easy tap-in, but you don't go to the net, you don't get that goal.
That's right.
Right? And that's how it works. I mean, the first one's kind of fortuitous opportunity to get the breakaway, but that's, you get to the dirty areas, and, you know, people talk about shooting percentage. It's a new catchphrase. People like to, it's kind of an easy reference. He's at 25%. This is higher than his career levels. Sure, I understand that completely. But you go into the dirtier areas, and you can have a chance of scoring. And he's leading. And you know, it's a, and I think what's important is he's been good all year. and he's been really good through this last stretch, and there hasn't really been a sense of panic. And the Jets need leadership, and you can lead by your play on the ice and by what you and by your actions in the dressing room. And he's not maybe the most vocal guy as far as we've heard. I mean, we're not in the room, but he his actions are speaking louder than anybody's words right now. And it's been a great streak for him right now. Is he going to continue it? No, but if he can play at his last year's levels for the rest of the season, then the Jets are dancing.
He doesn't need to be a vocal leader the way he's playing on the ice. He's shown up game in, game out. I mean, as good as the first two goals were on Thursday night. And, yep. I mean, the first goal, yeah, you know, it's fortuitous that they blew their coverage and he got a breakaway. And, you know, he capitalized on it, though, so full marks.
Yep.
And he crashed in that hard and full marks for that on the second goal. What almost impressed me as much as the two goals were the play he made along the boards when New Jersey was trying to tie the game, trying to gain entry into the Jets zone with under a minute to play. There's two Devils guys on him, and he fights the puck. He escapes with the puck, and he feeds it to Blake Wheeler, and Blake Wheeler gets the empty net goal. That's a play. And that's just a guy who's got the determination level. He's saying to his teammates and to himself, they're not going to get this puck from me. I'm going to win this battle.
Yep.
I'm going to win this individual battle along the boards, and I'm going to cement the game for my team.
Let's not forget that is as big of a play
mm-hmm. as the other two goals are.
Fair enough.
Andrew Ladd's a very smart hockey player, and you mentioned going to the net, and he has leadership qualities that are being displayed right now by what he's doing on the ice. And, you know, I think he had a good season last year, and, you know, he's continuing it. He stayed here, obviously, during the lockout, and he's been night in and night out their best player. And, you know, that's really important. I mean, I think last year people were not necessarily on this show were saying, oh, should someone else be the captain? You know, is Andrew Ladd the guy? You know, does he score enough? Does he do this? I don't think anybody, Drew's asking that question this year. And I don't think it's just the fact that he's got 12 goals and he's tied for fourth in the NHL in goals. I think he's doing the other things, whether it's you know, finishing a check or coming back defensively. And, you know, watch Andrew Ladd, the little things that he does on the ice. And you'd like to see that more from other players. But, you know, as far as the Jets are concerned now, Richie, look at Olli Oakland, 7 points in 20 games. He's a guy that's got to get going. They're winning without him really contributing that much, even though he scored a few goals on that road trip in New York and New Jersey. But, you know, he's a guy, to me, is more concerned. You know, Ladd, I think he'll be fine. I know he won't keep up the pace, but guys like Olli Oakland and Burmistrov, even though, you know, if you listen to previous shows, I really like how he's developed his defensive game, and I think he's been one of the better forwards. But again, he's got to put the puck in the net a little bit more. Antropov's got to put the puck in the net a little bit more. That's what I'm more concerned about.
Hold on, Nikolai Antropov's still on the team?
moving away from Ladd.
Are you sure? I haven't seen him yet.
You scared me from there for a second, Richie, because, you know, for a second there, I thought he might have been traded.
Moving away from Ladd for a minute is another guy I want to talk about who's been playing very well this year. And that's Ron Hainsey. And, I mean, Ron obviously is still pressing, trying to get that first goal as a Winnipeg Jet. But the Jets, especially with their injuries on defense this year, if Ron Hainsey hasn't been playing at the level he's been playing at, this would be a completely different season for the Jets. And it leads to the question, are the Jets sort of showcasing him to trade him? Or are they playing him so much, almost 24 minutes per game, are they playing him so much because they like him and they might re-sign him?
I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. I mean, it's kind of a catch-22, right? You play him, if he's playing well, you get into the playoffs, possibly. You get into the playoffs, you can't trade him. And then you get into the playoffs, what do you do? And then at the end of the season, do you look to re-sign
him?
He's
a UFA.
Or do you lose him for nothing? So it's an interesting situation. Remember last year, guys, when Aduya was dealt, the Jets were kind of out of it, and he wasn't a huge part of the squad. And
they got the picks.
Yep. But you can't make that trade this year, even for the same picks, I don't think, if you're 6th, 7th, or you're 1st in the division, 6th, 7th in the conference, or 1st in the division, and when a guy's playing 24 minutes a game for you.
Yep. And then you have to look at re-signing him. I honestly think, I mean, you know, this current contract notwithstanding, current contract was no fault of Ron Hainsey's. Somebody offers you that money, you're going to take it.
It was the responsibility of Don Waddell and a bottle of Jack.
You know, you look at the left side of the Jets' defense, and the left side of the Jets' defense is lacking behind Toby Enstrom.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think a case can be made for re-signing Ron Hainsey at a reasonable price.
Well, the question is, you have to always take into account, know, well, what is he asking for and versus what is he worth? But then if you can't, you don't think those are in line, then the next question is who's taking his spot,
right,
and who is available? And that's what you have to ask yourself, because Stewart is likely, you know, is a five guy and he's on your left side. Enstrom, you want him to be your one or playing one of your top two pairings. So that leaves another top four left side slot available. You know, Postma, Redmond, those guys are right side guys, and I don't think either of them is going to elevate themselves to top four level, at least in the foreseeable future. So then the question is, what's available on the market? And then are you overpaying on the market, because that's what the market is. It's inflationary, especially the UFA market or the trade market.
Well, if Mark Stewart is your third pairing left side defenseman, you're happy with that.
That's fine.
You're fine with that. That's mm-hmm. you got no qualms about that. But you're right. You look at the market and you have to say, and you look at the Jets system and you look at the pipeline and everything else, who in the next
two years
can step in and play Ron Hainsey's 24 minutes a game on the left side? And frankly, right now, unless they go dip into the free agency market, the answer is nobody.
And the question then is, you know, which defensemen are available as UFAs, really, right? You're not going to be offer sheeting somebody.
No.
So which defensemen are available as UFAs? And you're looking at the cast of characters that you're looking at coming for this upcoming offseason. You have a guy like Lubomir Vrsnovsky, but, I mean, he's not going to come in for cheap, and he's an offensive guy, and maybe he'll go to Europe. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen with him.
He's also not young by any stretch of the imagination.
No, not young by any stretch of the imagination at all. Now, Sergei Gonchar, same idea. Remember, these are UFAs, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys who are UFAs are either looking for their huge payday or at the end of a huge payday. Kind of one of the two, right?
Right.
And so, Hainsey cracks up there. I mean, it's a lot of forwards available this year, obviously led by Getzlaff and Perry.
Yep.
And Jerome McGinley. Guys like that, but... you don't have much in the way of defense available. So these are all questions that I think have to be asked.
And that's, I mean, Ron Hainsey at the end of this year will be 31 years old. Pardon me, he'll be 32 years old at the end of this year.
Let me read you a couple of the free agents available, because, I mean, there's guys who can play here. You have Vrsnovsky, as I mentioned, and Gonchar. Mark Streit, it's the same idea. Those are all three left-handed offensive defensemen. Robin Regier, has he seen his better days? Marek Zdlicky, Ryan Whitney, you can't crack the Edmonton lineup on a consistent basis. Roman Hamrlik, who is over the hill. Rob Scuderi, who I love. He's 34, who I love. He'd be great here, but I don't know what he would cost and if Elliott's going to let him go. Then you're getting to the Leopolds, the Ludmans, the Podies. You know, Doug Murray, maybe, but he's wearing down the way he plays. Ladislav Smith is a guy I really like. I don't think Edmonton lets him go. But then you're probably overpaying for him. So... You really don't have much.
And all these guys, you know, on the free agency market, on the unrestricted free agency market, you know, it's not like they're a huge upgrade over Ron Hainsey if you're looking to upgrade at that point in time.
Can you play top four? And the question really is, can Hainsey play top four?
Well, he's been playing it this year.
But has he been playing it to a level that... I mean, I personally think the best move is to deal Hainsey for what you can get for him. And have that long-term vision, but I think the Jets are going to be between a rock and a hard place if they are in the playoffs.
Yeah, and right now they're playing well, and a lot of that has to do with Ron Hainsey.
I'd still deal with that. I'd still deal with him, but, I mean, I'm not running the team and have to deal with all the PR backlash about that.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. One final segment for this Saturday morning. Before we get to it, this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. Contact Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226. Or visit them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. It sort of seems later because we were on from 6 till 9 last week. So, you know, 8 to 11 seems like a breeze at this point.
It's a breath of fresh air, Drew.
Rapid fire with a Winnipeg Jets theme.
No fresh air in the studio.
Olli Jokinen has been on the point on the Jets power play. He's been the point man on the Jets power play going on about five or six games now. Have you seen anything with that experiment that makes you believe that the Jets should continue along that same path?
No.
You didn't like it from the...
It is rapid fire.
To be fair, Richard, you didn't like it from the start.
I don't. And this is the biggest drawbacks in terms of the Jets forward group. Is they don't really have... I mean, Enstrom would play that slot. Obviously, he's injured. The Jets don't have that really good passing forward who can run the power play. And you have Jokinen up there. He's not really great at the one-timer. He always double clutches. And he's not a great passer. And the puck just seems to kind of stop at him and not go anywhere. I don't like it. I'd rather have a guy like that in front of the net. And I even put Hainsey back there ahead of Jokinen, in all honesty. I'm not trying to be funny. I honestly believe that. Because I think the puck would move a little more seamlessly than it does with Jokinen. I don't like the experiment. And he's a guy who's a bigger guy. He's tough to bring down. Get him down low. Or at least put him on the right side, lower on the hash marks there. I don't like him on the point.
I agree with Richie P. You know, without Enstrom, your best guy on the point there is Byfuglien. And Jokinen, you should try to maybe work down low, get something going with Ladd or Kane, you know, in front of the net. I think you got to keep Byfuglien there.
Moving on, you know, the Jets had that 5-on-3 situation earlier in the game, mm-hmm. Earlier this week. And one glaring thing I noticed on that is that Evander Kane was nowhere to be seen on the ice in a 5-on-3 situation. Mm-hmm. You ask most independent Jets fans, I think everyone would say he is their most dynamic offensive player. Why was Evander Kane not on the ice in a 5-on-3 situation?
I think this dates back to last year. Drew didn't have as many opportunities on the 5-on-3. I like to see him out there, and he's certainly getting a lot of ice time. I like to see him out there, and I don't remember last game particularly if he had played the shift before, but 5-on-3 is essentially no skating, so... you're standing around, and I would like to see him get a little more opportunity. I realize that his passing skills aren't great, but then you put him on the side and you take advantage of that really good wrist shot. And, you know, as Jeremy mentioned 2 seconds ago, he can get that puck. It's not that hard on a 5-on-3, but he can get the puck down the ice so quickly, you can get your setup going right away.
That's it. I can't add much to that, but, you know, he, especially, you know, Kane, you know, Richie mentioned the wrist shot, but Kane's got so many abilities to beat guys with his speed or you know, his different looks. But, you know, Noel made the decision not to dress him. But, you know, if you're asking me should he be out there or why wasn't he out there, the answer is you'd have to ask Noel about that. But he should definitely be out there. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Al Montoya, Winnipeg Jets backup. He's back to being healthy in, obviously, when the Jets decided to send Eddie Pasquale back down to St. John's of the AHL. When is the next time you would want to see Al Montoya start a game for the Winnipeg Jets?
You know, Drew, I think it has to be the second Florida game on this road trip. And I know you will go game by game, but Pavlik can't come in and play 43 or 46, whatever it is. I mean, they got to give him a break, and I think Montoya should draw in on the second Florida game on this upcoming road trip.
Yeah, whenever Pavlik, you know, Pavlik can't go, and they're riding him right now, but it's got to be, Richie, either the second game or the third game. Probably so, one of those two.
It's got to be in the back one part of the one half of the back to back on the road. That's what it's got to be,
right? And
I play him against Florida because Tampa's probably going to be your competitor in terms of the top of the division. It's a more important game.
Let me ask
and a better team.
Let me ask sort of an addendum to that question. When you know he started the year fine, you know Andrei Pavlik, and then he sort of began his downward spiral, which he's fortunately come out of. He began that downward spiral when he sat in that game against the New York Islanders. That was sort of the first start that, you know, after that he took him a while to get back into it. Do you have any concern that him sitting for a game might lead to another sort of hiccup in his performance?
I think it's an assumption that's being made that him sitting was the direct effect of him struggling. I'm not so sure those two are related. And in any event, you can't play the guy 46 games, right?
Yeah, I agreed. Let's wrap up. Rapid fire with this following question: one player, one under the radar player, sort of on another NHL team that you think the Jets should acquire that wouldn't cost much and would probably help them. Anybody that comes to mind?
It's a guy like nobody really. This is a guy over in with the Rangers. It's Matt Zuccarello. And I know there's some talk about Larry Brooks last week about the Rangers possibly bringing him back. I know they have his rights still, I believe.
He's not playing with the team?
No, he's overseas.
Playing in Europe.
He's a small guy. He's probably like 5'6", 5'7". He's a left-handed shooting guy. But he's a really good passer. And I actually feel like a guy like that could flourish in even the Jets' second unit. I mean, the Jets have some spots on the wing that really aren't being filled by really good players. with all due respect to guys like Peluso and Thorburn, et cetera, and obviously Wellwood sitting out, a guy like him could possibly help in terms of passing on the power play because they really don't have that many good passing forwards.
But he's different than Kyle Wellwood because you said he's a small guy who's good with the puck.
You could run the power play through him a little more than you could Wellwood, put it that way.
Has he?
This guy's not necessarily somebody who would become available because he was just traded, but I really like Cody Eakin, and we had him on the show, and I think the Jets really need a guy, some more grit from a guy who can also score. And, you know, Thorbs and Peluso, they offer, you know, that. But, you know, a guy like Cody Eakin, I think a player like that is a guy who the Jets could really use on their forward group. But, I mean, right now I think, for me, going ahead, the biggest concern would probably be, you know, how are you going to address your defense next year, knowing that Hainsey's going to be an unrestricted free agent. But for me, that's kind of what I think the Jets are lacking right now.
Let's wrap the show.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, cheers or jeers?
Can't find it, by the way. Zuccarello might actually be via UFA. Anyhow, so somebody that I think that they should be interested in, depending on his status. My cheer this week goes to Gordie Howe. Gordie Howe turned 85, and Cam Cole had a great feature on him talking about just Gordie Howe's legacy and how he was golfing with him and one day, or somebody was golfing with him, and Gordie put up a 68 on the scorecard, 68 in golf, obviously one of the greatest players of all time, hockey-wise. Apparently used to take batting practice and hit balls at a Tiger Stadium. I forget which player was talking to him, and he said, you know, what can't you do? He said, you haven't even seen me bowl. It's amazing. The guy played till he was like mid-50s and one of the greats of all time, and give him honor and respect to 85th birthday.
As a cheerleader,
make it quick. 20-year anniversary of Timo Salani's breaking the record. That's great and brings back great memories.
I assume you're cheering that.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to wrap it up on a personal note, if you guys will allow me to do so. My grandmother, Rose Mandel, passed away late on Thursday night at the age of 93. She was married to my grandfather, Joe Mandel, for 72 years. The most important thing in her life was family, and she always put us first and foremost. On behalf of my entire family, we will miss you, Rose Mandel, and we love you dearly. That's it for this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets-Caps game, 2 o'clock on this station. Hustler and Lawless follow us momentarily. And Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 1 o'clock. Big thank you to our guests, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, Joe Beninati from Comcast Sportsnet in Washington, and Jeremy Weiss from Weiss Tech Hockey. Big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, the Linden Market Dental Center, Elite Sports Injury Clinics, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Remus and producer Tim, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thank you for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.